If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another episode of the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Today I am joined by Mary Jelkovsky. She is the host of Mary's Cup of Tea podcast. She's also Mary's Cup of Tea on Instagram. And Mary is an expert on self-love, self-care, self-worth. But the topic we really end up exploring today is, how do you let love in? How do you allow people to love you? How do you allow yourself to find ways to accept love and practice compassion? And we talk a lot about her TED Talk that she did that I will link in the show notes about her kind of breaking point with disordered eating. We talk a lot about how the antidote to destructive behaviors is compassion and letting go of shame. We talk about how to find a version of quote-unquote self-care that works for you, and how probably a lot of the things you see on social media are not the self-care acts that are going to make the biggest difference, and finding things that you actually like instead of things that you think you're supposed to like per society or per Instagram. So we had a really great conversation and it's a lot of fun talking to her. I did an episode of her show as well, but definitely go out, get her book, and also check out her podcast. Welcome, Mary, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Very exciting to chat with you again.
Hey, Kendra, likewise. I really loved our conversation on my podcast, so it's fun to do it again.
Yeah, I did too. And I was telling you before we started recording, but I had like one thought of how the episode would go. And then I watched your TED Talk, which I'll link in the show notes because I think everyone should watch it. But it really changed kind of what I like was hoping the take-home message of the episode would be. So I would love if you could start by sharing the mocha story. I think it's really powerful. And I know this is like what jump-started everything that you do.
Oh, that's so funny. I haven't told it in a while, but it's...
Oh, good. Okay. I was like, I wonder if she's like sick of telling the mocha story.
No, I actually, it's very near and dear and close to my heart because it involves my mom, who is just a big supporter for me then and always. And essentially I was a late teenager. I just graduated high school and was one of those gals who just grew up way too fast for my own good. Moved out before I even turned 18, went out to college. And part of what motivated me to really like get on my feet and live on my own and everything was because I had started competing in bikini fitness competitions as a senior in high school. Now I feel like people who hang out on social media might know what that is. But back then it was just up and coming. But basically it's like the big bodybuilding shows with the men in Speedos. Well, there's a division for women in bikinis. Same idea, but a lot more sexualized, I would say, retrospectively. But anyhow, I was essentially really obsessed with dieting, working out, was really deep in diet culture, gym culture, fitness culture at the extreme. And as I was preparing for, I think it was my third show, I had just put my body through a lot. Between every show, I would go through these cycles of binge eating. You know, I would lose a bunch of weight and then I would gain it all back and then some. And it was really, really hard to kind of get back into on season after having an off season. And the only thing that would really motivate me is having like another show coming up. But this time of my life, it just felt like my body could not do it anymore. So I was just battling with myself, feeling so guilty and ashamed that I could not stick to a diet. And this one time, my mom, because I'd moved out, I lived like an hour away. My mom kind of worked near where I lived. So anyway, she asked me to meet up for coffee at one of our favorite coffee shops in Phoenix, Arizona. And I kind of reluctantly agreed, and a part of reluctantly agreeing to plans in general with my mom, with friends, even dating plans, is that anything outside of my like meal plan, diet, workout regimen, school schedule, it just kind of threw me off. Like if I was in a cafe and I saw a croissant and I wanted it, suddenly like my mind was always just fixated around food. But nevertheless, she's my mother. So of course, I'm going to say yes to going to coffee with her. And as I pulled up to this coffee shop, my mom is sitting outside on one of the little patio tables. And she like waves to me and I roll down my window and she's like, I got you our favorite mochas. And actually, my mom is Russian. So it's more like, I got this, the mochas. You love the mochas. She's like Gloria from Modern Family, but make it Slavic. And I don't even think I got out of the car. I remember either rolling down the window or like slightly opening the door, getting out. But as soon as I heard those words, I like very viciously kind of like slammed the door and put myself back in the car because a mocha was not on my meal plan. And yeah. It just sent me into this panic, anxiety. And my mom's like so worried because I'm just having this little mentee bee. And she comes up to my window. She's like, what's going on? And you know, I think she was probably just like concerned about my mental health in general at that point. But I just start like kind of hysterically crying, losing my shit. And I am ashamed to recount that one thing I said to her was, I can't believe you would get me a effing mocha. You know, you should know better. And this was not the first time, but it was one of the few times that I lashed out on my mom over food. Similar prior time before that was, even before I had moved out, I had asked her to like take the salmon out of the freezer so I can meal prep it when I got home. And she forgot and I flipped out because that would just ruin my whole routine. Anyway, as I drove away, I was like ugly sobbing and just feeling again guilty and ashamed because at this point there was this added layer of hurting someone I loved. And like I said, my mom's Slavic, so it didn't feel like anything I could explain to her that I was struggling with. I just felt silly and stupid. But surprisingly, in that specific scenario, and my mom's a lot more like, she's a very compassionate person, but I guess it like pleasantly surprised me and held me at a time when I was at my lowest. She sent me a text right as I pulled away. And she said, word for word, I just want you to know that I love you very much and I'm here for you anytime you need me. And granted, for like a Slavic mother after like a full-blown like cussed at her kind of situation, like it was one of the first times I kind of received that from her and, you know, at the moment that I needed it the most and completely altered our relationship. Of course, I immediately called her and apologized and just started kind of opening up. But that was kind of the moment that I realized that I was letting my body image take away from my life, like the people I love, hurting the people I love, connection, little joys and delights, like having a mocha with your mom, coffee shop, like how sad it is to live in such disordered eating. I mean, at that point, full-blown eating disordered mindset.
Yeah, that's such a powerful story. And I mean, I think when you feel at your lowest, when you're at kind of like those rock bottom moments, I feel like we get like these little kind of glimpses of, okay, I have this clarity and you ran with it. And I feel like a lot of people, they may get those, but they don't necessarily kind of see it as that. And the fact that you were able to take that for what it was and see the love that your mom had for you. And you mentioned in the talk, like, it was a moment of someone seeing someone love you when you did not love yourself, which really struck me. I mean, they talk about that a lot in 12-step recovery, like, let us love you until you can love yourself. And I do think that is such a powerful notion, and one that I feel like I've definitely experienced too. But I can also relate to the fact that it's very hard to do that. And you talk about that in the TED Talk as well, of just allowing love to come into you. Because when you're going through something, and I'll bring it back to the, like, a breakup, when it feels like the source of your, like, romantic love and all these things is gone, I think it is very difficult to feel any sort of love from anyone, let alone, like, being able to look at yourself and be like, I love you. Like, there's nothing wrong with you. This is just a relationship that didn't work out. And yeah, so I just thought that was, like, such a powerful message in that, of allowing other people to love you.
Yeah. And to build on that, I think, like, the clarity that I got could not have happened without the compassion that I received. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that, like, had my mom called me being like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You owe me an apology. It might have taken me a little bit longer. And I only say that because I'll bring it back to also self-compassion. But instantly, when you're in a moment of anger, that kind of vulnerable anger, and someone sees that in you as hurt, now you can heal. Because now we got to the real thing. And I think you can do that for yourself. There's a couple different scenarios. Somebody listening to this might recognize, you know, being the support system for someone else. And I've been in a relationship with an addict before too. And we all know that anger and just get your shit together back at them does not work. Like, really all they need is compassion and love. So the few different sides of it is, if you are on the supporting side, also, like, if you're going through something, really, like, requesting what you need, that I just need you to remind me, you know, that I'm really hurt, or I just need you to remind me that this takes time and it's vulnerable. And also directing that compassion toward yourself too. Like, somebody can love you before you love yourself, but that's with the kind of, like, tangential journey of learning to love yourself. And it ebbs and flows into the same, like, from the same bucket. It's not like self-love and then love for others. It's the same place that it comes from and goes to, like, a dam. I don't know what a good analogy. I'm so bad at analogies. I feel like as a podcaster, I should be good at analogies.
Yeah. Lately, I've been so bad at coming. And the word I was searching for earlier is moment of clarity, which you then said clarity. And I was like, that's what it was. And then just now I remembered a word I was trying to think of in an interview yesterday. It just came to me, like, a full 24 hours later. But yes, I completely agree. I feel like bringing it back to, like, the idea of self-compassion, it's such a big message I try to put forth on this podcast, is judging your feelings while it might feel like that's the right thing to do, of just, like, pushing them away, of, I can't believe your situation with the mocha could have gone a different way, where you're driving away and you're like, that was so stupid. Like, I'm crying over, like, a mocha. Like, this is crazy. And you could be, like, very much judging it, but you had that, like, text and it got to this place of, oh my gosh, I feel so broken, instead of, like, this is so silly, or this doesn't make any sense. It's like, oh no, of course this makes sense. Like, of course you're feeling this way. Of course it's hard. And I think with breakups, like, it's so easy to, after a few months, say, I can't believe I'm this upset over this breakup. But all you're doing is just making it harder on yourself and really blocking avenues of healing.
Totally, totally. Like, that, my mom was my mirror. And I know you had that in your journey where you'd shared that. You talked everyone's ear off about your breakup, because at a certain point you're like, am I crazy, alone? I need solutions. Like, whatever I can get, I'll take. And just yesterday I was at the chiropractor and this girl sat down next to me and she she looked like she was in the medical field. So she was wearing these like blue trouser scrubs. I also own navy blue trouser scrubs because I don't like leggings and I don't like jeans, and trousers are just like my perfect pant. Anyway, we got to chatting and she had mentioned that she was 32. I'm like, oh my gosh, please tell me your 30s are amazing. They must be, aren't they? And she very quietly, like you could tell she was kind of like, do I share this? Do I not? She goes, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm going through a divorce. And I was like, oh, my first thing, whenever somebody tells me that they're going through a breakup or a divorce, I say, congratulations, because that's what somebody told me when I left my ex, one that I mentioned. And it was actually this couple who was on their honeymoon. And I was like, I'm on my breakup trip. And they're like, congratulations. And I thought it was just so perfect.
Yeah.
Where was I going with that? Yeah. Just, I don't know where I was going with that.
I agree. I remember this was a long time ago, but I had run into someone I hadn't seen in a long time. And they told me they were going through a divorce. And I said, sorry. And she was like, don't say sorry. It was a really good thing. Like, don't say sorry. And then ever since then, if anyone tells me they're going through a breakup, I will never say sorry. Like, I'll either say good for you, or I'll like let them take the lead on like, tell me where you're going with this. But I think the validation piece and allowing someone else to see you is so important. But I also think what can happen is we even block ourselves off from that, especially when we are at a bottom. And I think it's for a number of reasons. Sometimes you just want to sit in your stuff. And sometimes like, you don't want other people involved because you know that sometimes you know they'll make you feel better and you don't want to feel better. I do think there are some reasons why we tend to keep our pain to ourselves. One of them is like, we're not ready to have any solution, or we don't want to feel like loved from other people. And then sometimes it could be like, we don't trust that anyone knows what we're going through. I think that's another big one. My situation is unique. With your mom, like you have no idea what it feels like to be this upset over a mocha, or you don't know what it's like to be this obsessed about body image, but then we don't share it and we don't find out the fact that like almost everyone struggles with this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I remembered what I was going to say in regards to self-compassion.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So this shows up everywhere. Like, so I was talking about the different scenarios. You might be going through a breakup. You might have a difficult relationship with food. You might be just like struggling to stay grounded amidst the news, the state of the world. And with that, what is the self-talk, the go-to default self-talk that a lot of us have been taught is, I should be doing more. Why aren't I over this by now? I just suck. Can't get anything done. I'm the only one, like you said, I'm the only one feeling this way. And to me, the way that self-compassion has healed, not only like my eating disorder in a broad sense, but like very specifically, binge eating. I used to binge eat every single night. And I don't know if some therapists will hate me for saying this, but the only thing that has helped me stop binge eating is giving myself unconditional permission to binge eat. Like literally saying, so what if I binge eat right now? I want to binge and that's what I'm going to do. And like almost taking this really intense ownership and responsibility and taking my autonomy back as I was gorging on food. And the first night I was like, this is awesome. Of course, there's that little voice behind me that was like, I need to stop. What are you doing? But at that point, I had tried everything. I had tried eating enough, quote unquote, enough. You know, I tried not eating enough. I tried keeping all my trigger foods out of the house. I would still dig them out of the trash. I tried spraying food with Lysol so I wouldn't dig it out of the trash. Like I was extreme. And it wasn't until I told myself that I could eat all three of these Costco baguettes and all two sticks of that, you know, that Kerrygold butter, the Irish butter.
Yes.
My favorite. That I actually like the urge subsided. And then like literally overnight, again, therapists are going to hate me for this, but literally overnight, this is just personal experience. I stopped binge eating. Like literally that, I mean, not to be extreme, but that's what it took for me. And so I think when it comes to healing of any kind, I'm wondering if that could be extended not, this is not research, but like, please report back if it does help you. Like, what if you told yourself you're going through a breakup? I'm allowed to have a broken heart right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm allowed to burst into tears randomly if you're going yeah. through any type of other grief. I'm allowed to mess up my house and not clean it. That's like such a yeah. big, right? Like not wash my dishes. Like it's okay for right now. I think that, I don't know, it seems a little bit, like I said, radical and extreme, but I think it might be the antidote to a lot of the like shoulding and forcing and talking down to ourselves that we do.
Again, I'm not a therapist. I'm not an eating disorder specialist, but I completely see how that happens. It's like, I don't know. And a lot of my stuff is also anecdotal, but like when someone comes to me and tells me like, I slept with my ex, I say like, that is okay. That is okay. Maybe it doesn't feel good. And that's fine. Like maybe write about how it made you feel and like keep it. So maybe next time if you're considering it, like you can read that back. But like, I guarantee the fastest way that you're going to do it again is by shaming yourself for it. Like that's the number one reason that's going to make you do it again is shaming yourself for it. And just instead of saying, okay, I did it, I can live with the consequences of this, I can notice how it makes me feel. And I think a lot of it comes down to, this is something my dad always taught me, was this idea of curiosity versus judgment, of because they're really like the same, they have the potential to be the same kind of mindset, like the same thing, just two sides of the coin. And instead of being judgmental about it, just be like, let's see how it feels to do this. Instead of like, I can't believe I'm doing this, I can't believe you're doing this, why are you doing this, this sucks, why are you doing, you're like a horrible person for doing this, instead of saying, I'm going to do this without judgment and I'm going to see how it makes me feel from like a total curious perspective and go from there. And I think that's like has to have something mm-hmm. to do with it.
Is your dad like open to adoption or? Because I could use a dad.
Yes. I mean, he is like.
Curiosity over judgment.
Yeah. He's honestly like so incredible with that stuff. I mean, it's so hard for me to explain what he does. He's a leadership consultant. He does corporate culture consulting and he wrote a book called The Mood Elevator. Mm. And that's like the center of the mood elevator is curious goes up and then judgment goes down. But yeah, I think it's this idea of like approaching things with curiosity. And when someone comes to me and says like, I can't stop looking at my ex's social media, I say, okay, for the next week, you're allowed to look at them, their page every day. The only thing you have to do is like make a little note on how it makes you feel afterward, but that's it. Like no judgment, just see how it makes you feel, let yourself do it. So I think there has to be some validity to it. And maybe some, I don't know, maybe some therapists can report back on what they think about it.
Yeah. I'm glad you clarified that it's more about the shame and you said it so perfectly. I guarantee you that the shame is going to make you do it again.
Yes.
You said that so much better than I feel like I misspoke because I'm not telling people to like go bingey or let their dishes get moldy.
No, but that's like the whole idea of it is like letting go of that. And I think like in your case too, and this was something that I wanted to like ask you about is walking the line of like the idea of self-care and like how it can just, it is a thin line of stepping overboard and getting into this spot of, I don't know, I just feel like this idea of self-care can lead to this like, thing of self-hatred, especially in the like current climate we're in on like social media and stuff, of just completely always being inundated with, you need to do this and this and this and this and this and this. And it's probably easy to say, I'm just doing this to make me better. But in reality, like it's just making like self-esteem worse. So I feel like, I don't know if that there's like a particular question in there, but I would love to hear like your thoughts on that of self-care in a way that leads to self-love instead of self-hatred.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering if what you're observing is that self-care is really hella expensive and supposed to look a certain way, which is also expensive, and then needs to be filmed, which is time-consuming and brings up lots of insecurities. And then it's not really for you, is it?
What? So, yeah. Yeah.
I think, yeah, self-care has definitely been commodified. The way I kind of laid the groundwork in my book, The Gift of Self-Love, is I think of self-love as a formula consisting of three parts. And the first part is self-esteem, which is kind of like the basic confidence that most people would think of. I can go into that later. Self-worth, which is a little bit more deeper, underlying, a lot of deep-rooted beliefs are living there. It's probably going to take a lot of unpacking, hopefully with a therapist, but also just within yourself over time. And then you mentioned self-care. I call it actually self-compassion, because to me, self-compassion is the actions. That is like how you take care of yourself, is through acts of self-compassion. And most of the time, they're not sexy. They might even be a bit ugly. I don't know anybody who's felt, I don't know, or you do take baths?
You know, sometimes I'm not like a big, I don't want to sit in a bath for like an hour. That's just not like my flavor of like relaxing, I guess.
Yeah. Well, here's my problem. I mean, I'm so fortunate. I live in a double income household with no kids. My husband bought this house before we met. We live in the suburbs of Arizona. Arizona's notorious for having nice real estate. All that to say, I live in a nice house. My bathtub in my primary bedroom, when I fill it up all the way, the water doesn't even cover my nipples. And then it's cold 10 minutes later. Like literally, I love that journey for you. If you have a deep enough bathtub and can fill it with bubbles and then post about it on Instagram, I think that's really cute and awesome. But I don't think that's like most people. And I especially take issue with it in terms of like, I think the people who could use a lot more self-love than they have access to in terms of resources, like mental health resources, time off work, childcare, if they have children, just a lot of that like access stuff that we think about, is probably people who might not even have a bathtub, let alone one that is like safe enough to sit in. So that small example is emblematic of what is going on in kind of the self-love social media sphere, is that a lot of things are being like packaged and sold to us as self-care. And to me personally, and I'm like probably one of those voices on social media, but to me, like the acts of self-care that make the most difference, first of all, it's a cup of tea, like a hot beverage, a warm beverage. I always believe in that. That's why I called myself Mary's Cup of Tea on the internet. Maybe it's like the journaling, the therapy sessions that you feel worse off after than you did going in. And it's like, this is what I'm paying for. And it's a little bit ugly. The difficult conversation that you had with your family member, the closure you had to give yourself because your ex ghosted you or didn't have the balls or ovaries to actually face up to like what didn't work out. That's the kind of self-care that I think is, well, first of all, hard to sell. I did try to sell tea. The profit margin is so slim. And by the time the shipping costs came out, I was like negative money. So just, you know, for anybody listening who's like entrepreneurial like us, I don't know if you're going to
recommend tea.
I do have a little journal. It's like $10. I love a good journal. But aside from that, like spa days are, I mean, does that really heal you in a substantial way?
Yeah. I mean, the answer is no.
Why are you saying controversial things right now?
No, I love, really am happy that we're having this conversation. And I really never thought about that. Like, yes, the things that actually are the self-love, like are very difficult to put into an aesthetic looking vlog.
Yes.
No one's going to like film themselves, like typing out a text to their like mom, like, no, sorry, you can't come. Yeah. You know, that's not.
How do you model that?
Yeah. And like, I was thinking about this idea of, I don't know, people will talk about setting boundaries with their ex of saying, I don't want you to contact me anymore. And people will be like, I don't know how I'm going to get to the point of being able to do that. I don't know. Sometimes you're not going to like spa day your way into doing that. You're not going to like bath your way into doing that. It's really just kind of doing it before you're ready and then realizing, oh, whoa, I feel, not right after, but period after, you'll be like, oh my God, I feel so powerful and like so worthy that I like, I'm worth potentially upsetting someone because I I do care about my boundaries and my emotional well-being.
Totally. And maybe in that regard, if the spa day like puts you in that mindset, 100% go for it. But is it like a prerequisite? Because that, like the work that you're teaching people to do, that's the nitty gritty important healing work. Whereas if we're just scraping the surface, then you're going to find yourself chasing external validation, checking to see if your ex checked your sexy, like wrapped in a towel spa day photo. And I love that you brought up that sometimes we want to be alone. Sometimes we want to talk to people. Like it's probably the synergistic balance between being with yourself, sitting with yourself and your feelings, and then letting other people talk you through it, console you, hold you tenderly. And it's a little bit of both. And I said synergistic, but I like to think of things like that as more of a harmony. And I talk about like intuitive eating. A lot of people like to say like balanced eating. So the parallel that I'm going to draw here too is that I personally am like a words girl, and words can like make or break my mindset. So in case this helps somebody, like I don't like to tell myself everything in moderation or just like eat balanced, you know, whatever. I tell myself like intuitive eating is like harmonious eating. There's a harmony. That means that sometimes there's going to be more of one thing. Sometimes you're going to be in a season of your life where you want to be alone, and sometimes there's going to be less, and it's not going to be in like a perfect seesaw balance. It's probably going to be more of like a give and take, that any given moment might feel disbalanced, but yeah, over time it kind of evens itself out.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If there's anything I've learned from my experience with breakups and seeing others go through them, is that it is so important to ask for help. In a society that glorifies hyper-independence, it's easy to forget that we're all better when we have a support system behind us. And a breakup is a really powerful time to build up or solidify your support system. And therapy can be a source of support for any area of your life. There have been times when just voicing something I've been struggling with internally to my therapist was the catalyst for not only solving the problem, but also allowing me then to talk to other people in my life and get even more support. BetterHelp is fully online, making therapy affordable and convenient, serving over 5 million people worldwide. Access a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties, and easily switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Build your support system with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/heartbreak today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/heartbreak. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes in addition to your breakup overwhelm? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. And these hormone disruptors are on top of the natural hormone changes we go through. And even though it is a natural process, it doesn't mean it doesn't wreak havoc on us. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore. Thanks to Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, a formula made with only herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal changes in women of all ages. I love that Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. And here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. That's why Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS symptoms, menopause symptoms, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, and occasional bloating and gas. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today. Did you know we spend a third of our lives in bed? It's a lot of time when you think about it, so I believe it's important to love your bed. And with March being Sleep Awareness Month, it's a great time to check out Avocado Green Mattress. I know as you're navigating your breakup, especially if it's new, you may become hyper aware of your bed, thinking about how it used to be yours and your ex's bed or one that you shared a lot of time in together. I remember after my last breakup, my bed was one of the first things I wanted to switch out. Avocado is not only crafted with certified organic latex, wool, and cotton, ensuring a safe, healthy sleep environment free from harmful chemicals and toxins, but they also have unmatched comfort and support for all sleep preferences. I need a soft mattress, and Avocado has everywhere from plush to extra firm depending on your needs. And Avocado is committed to sustainability. Their mattresses are made from organic, eco-friendly materials that are good for both you and the planet. Head to avocadomattress.com today and save up to 10% on certified organic mattresses. Dream of better.
Yes, I think that's beautiful. And I really like that distinction because, yeah, when you think of balance, that means there's a perfect amount on both sides, you know, where, and that's, I mean, no one can achieve that all the time. I'm curious, in what ways, like, did you go from being so obsessed with food, your body? How did you go from that to like being able to be in tune with, I just think about, you know, you're saying like you love a cup of tea. Like that's like such an important part of your practice. For people that are maybe coming out of a breakup where they don't know anything about themselves, how do you figure out like what your harmony is? Because I think I just think about all the things that I felt like I should like. I went on this big like matcha kick for a long time and I was like, I don't like matcha. Like I want coffee in the morning. So yeah. I don't know. Like it shouldn't be that hard to do, but it is so difficult to be in touch with this is what I really like, regardless of what other people or what social media is telling me.
Yeah. That was me with oat milk. I do heavy whipping cream in my coffee now.
I love heavy whipping cream, but like I'm in a half and half person. I don't like almond milk, but it's, I don't know. It is so funny that we're like, I should like this, right? Because everyone else likes it.
Yeah. No nut milks here. No, I'm just kidding. I appreciate like a good nut milk sometimes, especially if it's like one of those homemade almond milks. But
oh yeah,
I digress. So the question is, how do you get to know yourself like after a breakup?
Yeah. Or just in general, just going from, I guess, being so driven by a particular thing, obsession with your body, obsession with an ex, leaving a relationship. Like, how do you go from that to being able to say, I really like this?
It's funny you ask because I'm in a huge period of self-discovery right now. I've been feeling lost for a couple of years now, but now I say this with like a positive connotation. If you would have asked me a year ago, I would have been like, I don't fucking know, Kendra. Like, you are.
You tell me.
You tell me. Yeah. And I don't know if I have concrete answers right now either. But one thing that you did allude to that is so important to call out is how, well, I'll speak from personal experience. I think, and I wonder if this is with you in 12 step and how you think of it for yourself personally, because the communities are split on this. Do you say I'm in recovery or do you say recovered or do you call yourself like,
oh, interesting. So I know this is like a very, people feel very passionate. I don't think I feel passionate either way. I usually say like I'm in recovery from alcoholism. Like that's usually my thing. In a lot of ways, I would say I am recovered in the fact that I don't think about it. But I also would always say that I'm in recovery because like I know that I would never drink again. Like I know it would never go well if I tried again. So I think it's like kind of a split thing in that.
I gotcha. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How would you say it?
Well, it's funny because with food, like you can't never eat again, you know?
No, I know. That's why I'm always like so in awe of people who can recover from eating disorders, because that would be like me being like, okay, you can have a half a glass of wine 3 times a day. That would be wild.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh as hard. I'm feeling no, like
it's, people in recovery, like we can joke about stuff like that.
Well, I'll give you my answer at the end. How about that?
Okay. Okay.
Well, the only reason I bring it up just to get our listeners thinking, like, how do you think about yourself? Because there might be somebody listening to this that is like so fresh from a breakup. They're like, I am always going to care about them. I'm never going to not think about them. I might be married with 3 children and still wonder what my life would be like if me and this person worked out. Okay. Then there are other people who are like, I'm actually like pretty happily moved on. I'll occasionally take a peek at the Instagram, see what's up, see if I'm prettier than the new girl, and then, you know, move on. And, you know, all the in-betweens and outside and within. The reason why I say that is because one thing that I was wildly unprepared for is to feel as recovered as I am and therefore have so much time and mental real estate, brain space open up for activities and hobbies and like projects and pursuits and just like random things that, you know, I've either buried that I used to be interested in or new interests that unbeknownst to me are important to me. And so with that, I think you start like discovering yourself by doing things. I am a big, like more recently, it might be easy for me to say, because like I said, don't have kids yet and like have a pretty flexible work schedule. But I think a lot of people are kind of waking up to the importance of hobbies and an identity outside of work. I think that also relates to like outside of your relationship. I don't know if I mentioned this to you in our last conversation, but I'm pretty deliberately trying to do things without my husband with like this sense of sovereignty and separation. And that actually creates a lot of sexiness in our marriage. And I'm trying to push him to do things too. Cause I think the first 5 years we were like really attached and we had to live through COVID together. And so we both work from home. So I loved how close we got through that. But now like I'm kind of okay with not telling you all the inner workings of my mind or admitting that I hate playing pickleball with him because he's so much harder on me than he is playing with other people. And we just bicker and fight. And it's a whole thing. If you play pickleball, all the couples like tear each other's throats apart. But at first I was kind of like, oh my God, I should like love to play pickleball with my husband. And I would kind of like put my paddle in such a way that we weren't in the rotation together. And then we kind of looked at each other and I was like, I don't really want to play with you.
Yeah.
And so it's like my thing now. I mean, he's also dealing with chronic pain from a car accident, but that's beside the point. I think the stars have kind of aligned to put me in this like very, the word I used was deliberate space of self-discovery. And I think when you're going through a breakup or recovery or healing journey of any kind, you realize that at first it feels like this is so all-consuming. I will never be able to feel anything but this pain again. And then somewhere in between healing and growing, you kind of start finding pockets of space to do things for yourself and pockets of joy and actually getting in this weird place where you asked me like, how did I begin? And the image that instantly popped into my mind was me feeling fat as fuck, excuse my language, but that's how I thought back then. Big hoodie sweatshirt covering my body, just moved to a new place for a guy. That's a whole different story. Broke up, also a different story. Going through recovery and just taking these like long, painful walks by the river and it almost being comedic how movie montage-y, sad, melodramatic this scenario was. And in that like, you know, like comedy, drama, romanticize your life, that's like a popular kind of trend on the internet, you actually do start kind of seeing your healing in the bigger picture.
Yeah.
A little bit more abstract, I'm sorry.
No, I think that's great. And I've never really thought about it in that sense. But yes, I would always kind of say it in a way of you don't really have like a lot of energy to spare when you're going through a breakup because it is so all consuming. And I remember that too when first getting sober, it was constantly having to think about how to stay sober and feeling like I'm never not going to worry about this. And then as time goes on, and it is pretty like subtle that you get that perspective and then you look back and you're like, I don't think about that near at all anymore. And then the world starts opening up. So I feel like, yes, in the beginning, it feels probably more taxing. Push yourself to like go out with friends or push yourself to like say yes if someone says like, do you want to go try this? Yeah. And then with time, the capacity to do all of that stuff opens up and realizing like how much energy in the beginning you're spending on just your recovery, and then your recovery really starts paying off and you have the world just opens up and your energy and your time and all of that stuff just opens up. I've never really thought about it like that, but that was so spot on.
Yeah, I guess it feels painfully slow, incremental. And then maybe some people might have the experience that it's exponential, like my like overnight binge eating solution. Or perhaps, I don't know, I'm thinking of this John Green quote who writes teen young adult fiction novels that I grew up with. And there's a line in The Fault in Our Stars. Again, this is like so niche, but I love a teen drama. There's a book and a movie. And it says something like, I fall in love with you slowly and then all at once. Mm-hmm. And I feel like so much of healing and like loving yourself too, like at first it's like it has to be a very specific, strategic, reluctant practice. And then you kind of, you find your groove again. There's like no other way to say it. Like you don't, you can't really pinpoint when you stop thinking about them so much, but yeah. You did. And then you don't realize how little you thought about them until they do cross your mind. And you're like, wow, they haven't crossed my mind since I don't even remember when.
Yeah. And the idea of self-love, self-confidence, self-worth, it really is something that takes place over time. And it's like not from like the sexy things that we've mentioned. It's really about this thing in AA, it talks about a spiritual experience. And I remember when I first heard that, I was like, I don't know. It sounded so like woo-woo and like religious, like bush burning kind of situation. But the way they define it is, a spiritual experience is when you encounter a situation and you watch yourself handle it in a different way than you would have done it previously. And I was like, oh my God, that is so powerful. It is. It's that moment where something crosses your way and you handle it differently. And you're like, oh my God, I've changed. Like I've handled this in a way that shows love for myself. Or It is those things that are able to show us like, okay, I've come a long way.
Yeah. No, and that is, aside from it being spiritual, it's also the literal definition of mindfulness. A spiritual teacher, I don't know the pronunciation of his name, but it's like three words, Thich Nhat Hanh.
Do you know? Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking. I don't know how to pronounce it either, but yes.
I feel so embarrassed. But there's this one passage that he says, like, anything can be spiritual, like washing dishes can be spiritual. And like you said, it's that like moment where you're kind of like watching yourself wash the dishes. You're like fully present with the dishes and the warm water on your hands and everything. And like, that could be a hobby. That could be self-care. You know, I told people not to wash their dishes earlier, but I'm taking
we're back on washing dishes.
Meditate.
Yeah. And I have a guest coming up to talk about this idea of like, nothing is silly. She says people are always like, I know it's so weird, but I love this. It's like, no, nothing is weird. I realized lately I love purging stuff. If I had all the time in the world, I would go through my parents' house and just like organize, purge everything. And I'm like, that's my hobby right now. And I like that. I like that about myself, that is my hobby right now. So it doesn't have to be, I don't have to go out and pick up like a new sport or something. It's just paying attention to what you enjoy and what you keep coming back to.
Yeah. Heavy duty trash bags, gathering things like or collecting dust. I'm horny just thinking about it. Yeah. I'm actually really into purging also.
Yeah. I was like, this is weird. This is my hobby now, but
Say one thing. So, you know, how people say like guilty pleasures?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm done with that, right? We're done with that. They're not
just guilty pleasures.
It's just pleasures. Yeah. And then I was thinking about, like I said, love words. So I thought over the course of a couple days of what we could call them instead, I came up with entitled pleasures.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah. We like I that. Am entitled to, because I'm entitled to this.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to like stick yet, but I've been tossing it out there whenever I can. So
I like that. I like that. I also noticed the other day I was play date with a kid that my son goes to school with and the mom. And we were just talking about like TV shows. And I was noticing anytime someone talks about watching Bravo, they're like, I know, I love watching this like trash TV. And it's not. Almost everyone I know watches it. But it is funny how we sometimes use those qualifiers of, I know it's so trash, but I don't know why, but I just like love watching this TV. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, but Kendra, do you want the tea? Not to go activist on you, but I've already said so many controversial things.
Okay.
Only women say that. Men don't talk about NFL as their guilty pleasure when they watch men in little underwear wrestle each other. That's like
basically so true.
Shows, right? Like only women will talk about that when they, you know, are watching Gossip Girl or reality TV or whatever, because the stuff that's been created for us has been deemed frivolous. The stuff we spend money on is deemed unessential and silly and a waste and luxury. Nobody looks at a guy wearing a Rolex being like, man, that's so silly. I'm glad you splurged on yourself with the guilty pleasure. But a woman with a bag, totally different story.
Okay. This actually makes me your new term of entitled pleasures even more, looking at it that way. That makes it make so much more sense. And you know, this is like such a little side tangent that we're on now, but you know how like a lot of people will be like, I can't believe you pay that much for a haircut for women. My husband and I, we did the math on how often he has to get his hair cut and how much I spend on my hair. He spends more on his hair per year.
Yeah.
Does but he we have don't a think about it? No, he doesn't have a beard, but he just like keeps his hair short. So he gets it cut every 2 weeks. I'm like, yeah. I get my hair cut like a few times a year. And yes, I pay a lot more per time. We're looking at it that way. But anyways, I feel like we're off on a tangent. But I mean, all coming back, you're allowed to like what you like. And it will take time to figure out what that looks like. And if you're in the phase right now of, I don't know what I like, and it's like scary for me to even think about how I'm going to face the day, that's also okay, because that space will open up at some point.
Yeah. Maybe you just figure out what your favorite comfort food is.
Yes. I think lately I've been just telling people, I'm like, just do the little act of when it's time for dinner, just take a moment, take a pause and be like, what do I really want for dinner? Just so easy to go with, okay, what's healthy? What's this? What's all those things? Instead of just being like, okay, what do I really want for dinner? Or what do I like really want to watch on TV tonight? And don't add any qualifiers of like, okay, I'm going to watch this trashy reality show. Like, just, I'm going to watch this because I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I could not agree more to that. I just keep thinking about your husband's haircut. So I'm married to a bald, and just like the beard trim.
Yeah.
$50 a week. He started doing all that himself, though, saved a lot of money.
But yeah, no, it is so funny. I've never really thought about that. Yeah, they don't use qualifiers for stuff like that, where like, it does feel like a justification kind of thing for that. So funny. Yeah. Okay. To wrap it up, can you share a little bit about your book? I'm definitely going to link the TED Talk that we started off talking about, but can you share how people can get more from you?
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, by the way, for watching that. It's been a few years since I thought about that talk, but it's an honor to know that it's still touching people. I told you I was 21 when I did that TED Talk. I feel it's like amazing.
I was reading through the comments. So many comments. One almost made me cry. It was from a girl that said she was 13 and she was like watching it and just like it resonated. I don't know if you've read the comments lately, but I was very struck by that.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do tonight. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I think the mother daughter, well, because you're a mother too.
Yeah.
You could probably like picture yourself in that moment and like being on maybe either end too. My book is called The Gift of Self-Love. It's an interactive workbook. So I'm not just talking at you. You can get that on my podcast. I do a lot of Patty McPhee. But I've integrated it with different exercises that are like journaling-esque, you know, a little bit of mind mapping, just to get us incrementally healing, rewriting some of those beliefs that we have about whether it's body image and food or relationships or purpose in this life or how we feel about all of those things. I tried to make it more or less holistic and comprehensive, just like a crash course to self-love in book workbook form. And I also have a little complimentary journal, which is called 100 Days of Self-Love. And those are little prompts and excerpts that one can digest and journal, kind of like the 5-minute journal idea.
Oh yeah. I love that. Yes.
Yeah. And aside from that, I hang out a lot on the internet. I'm chronically online, trying not to be, which is why I'm playing a lot of pickleball, but that's causing a lot of back pain. So now I'm back to being online. So I'm there as Mary's cup of tea. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out. I really love talking to you, and I hope everyone gets your book and goes over and listens to the podcast. You can start with my episode, and then she has a lot of other ones. So Mary, thank you so much again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Kendra. It's a joy.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.